Welcome to Alive and Kicking, the 90s Football Podcast, the podcast that's more 90s than spending your summers at Erinsborough or Summer Bay. Ah. My name's Ash Rose, your host, your guide, you know all that. I'm back for another slice of 90s football with me old pal from the Football Tavern, Ed Chambers. How you doing, Ed?
Very well, mate, very well. I should interject at this point to say that you had a big birthday recently, and we shouldn't let that go without being mentioned. So you are now a 40-year-old male, but you've a sort of a teenager trapped inside that 40-year-old male's body, sort of thing. But yeah, we met up last week, didn't we? For you just had a few beers and it was lovely.
A few bevvies in the sunshine, nice. Almost had a nice pub garden to ourselves, didn't we? The kids played on climbing frames. It was like we were proper old men.
I think the adults were playing on climbing frames at one stage. But that was good. No, it was good fun.
It was good fun. Yes, thank you very much. I didn't shout too much about it because it's a club.
It's one of those, isn't it?
We're reluctantly in, but that's what we want to talk 90s when we went in that club anyway. Before we do, I mean, we haven't really seen each other literally speaking on this for a while.
Yep.
So we haven't really talked, I know this isn't a modern day football podcast, but we should probably tie a few bows on the season that we've just had.
Yeah, absolutely.
QPR have stayed up, so I'm a happy man.
Yep.
And as we recall this, Les Ferdinand has just stepped down as director of football as well.
Oh, really?
Somewhat not surprising, given the season we've had and some of the unrest. Mm. So big summer for Rangers there, both on and off the field, so we'll see what happens there. What would you enjoy about the end of the season, sir? What were your pick out?
I enjoyed the relegation battle actually in the Premier League. Funny enough, last time we did this, now I realise that was probably about 2 months ago. I said that something would have to go drastically wrong somewhere for Everton not to get relegated. And that somewhere else was Leeds.
They were at Leicester, in fairness.
Leeds were an absolute disaster, weren't they, for the last 6 weeks or so of the season. I mean, I could do a podcast on my own, I think, about Sam Allardyce and just rant about Sam Allardyce. I won't go into it too much. I think the guy's a bit of a con man, to be honest with you. But that being said, Leeds. So Everton survived. And, you know, one of those strange moments of, a mutual friend of ours, John, we actually watched it together in the pub, and we actually found ourselves sitting next to an Everton fan who was without doubt the most nervous man in the building. And at the end of the match, he went straight over to the bar and bought us like both an extra pint that we weren't expecting. So we was a little bit later home to the wives than we said we would be. But that, this was due to this random scouser that we'd met in the pub. So it was very, very nice. The Red Gates, I mean, Leicester, they should have got out of it, shouldn't they, really? Because they had the players. And it was almost like, Palace got out of it. And then Wolves got out of it, and then Bournemouth got out of it. And you think, Leicester will catch up with them at some point, and they never actually did. So next season's going to be interesting for all those three clubs that went down.
Championship is going to be a biatch.
Yeah, it really is, mate.
It's a tough league at the best of times.
But... Yeah, you just don't know what to expect. And funny enough, I know it sounds a bit weird, but I think even out of all three of them, even though they were the worst, I think Southampton might be the best equipped to come back, because they've appointed a good manager.
They've got a young squad. Yeah.
And they've got a youngish squad that, will probably toe the line of what that manager wants. So whereas Leicester have got to sell everybody, including the tea lady, haven't they? So, we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah. The Leeds of Big Sam appointment reminded me a little bit of when Forest brought in Big Ron at the end of the
series. At that point, definitely.
So past it as well, past that kind of firefight. Yeah. As they call it.
Yeah. It was just a massive gamble that absolutely... At least
Big Sam sat in the right dugout, I suppose, but yeah.
Yeah, true, yeah. I mean, I was having these arguments with people in the Football Tavern, and they were sort of saying to me, if you think Sam Allardyce is the problem, then, you need your head examined. And I said, I appreciate that the players are the issue, but he come in with all these promises about how he was as good as Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp and that. And I understand on the sports science thing, he probably is quite good, but actually... The defence didn't improve. The attack didn't improve. They got 1 point out of 12, and he walked away in a sunset of £500,000.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
I said I wasn't going to rant, and then I did it anyway.
He was probably ahead of the time, wasn't he? When he we at Bolton and with the sports science again at that time.
Life's moved on.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. So there
we are. That was wrapping up the season there in terms of
relegation. Yeah,
City, who did what we all probably expected them to do.
Amazing.
Well, and Jack Grealish is probably still on a bender somewhere. So fair play to him. So he's probably, well, he's at the England team now. But yeah, that was some celebration from, and you know, fair play to him. All the people going, oh, look at him doing. No, he's won the treble. Let him out and get hammered. Get on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the the problem, isn't it? Is that, you know, people are like, oh, you know, he should represent the club better. Or you don't see Kevin De Bruyne do that. I says, well, maybe Kevin De Bruyne is a bit boring. Maybe, you know, maybe Jack Grealish likes to go out and have a good time. And if he wants to go out and have a good time and it doesn't, if he doesn't end up sort of down dark avenues with it, and we don't look back and think, oh, I wish we could have done something about it, because that has happened to other people in other sports. You know, good luck to the guy.
Yeah,
you know?
I think so.
And you know what? I mean, you know, again, you could do a whole podcast about City, but you know that you can only beat what's put in front of you for a start. So they've won every, well, they've won three of the four competitions that they entered. And they, you know, if they hadn't beat Southampton, hadn't lost Southampton, they could have won the lot. And you know, these players, Jack Grealish, Kyle Walker, and all that sort of stuff, they don't understand how the finances work in the club. They just get paid to play football, and you know, they've that's a remarkable achievement. Remarkable achievement. I mean, their performance was better than BT's performance on the night, but that's better less said than
Very much, lads. That's
mate, that was awful. It was really bad.
They paid a lot of money for Mario Balotelli, and do you know what? They didn't get very much out of him. Let's be honest.
They paid a lot of money for that. I know I've ranted about this I'm an old man rant this morning, I think. But they paid a lot of money for Balotelli, and just before kickoff, Jake Humphrey said to him, "Right, Mario, Man City or Inter, who do you think?" And he went, "No comment." I went, so you're paying him like hundreds of thousands of pounds, probably, to say no comment. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Who's the mug, really? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, Jake Humphries has done a great job. I used to work with him, so I know he's an all right guy, but I felt like it wasn't really his party to take advantage of during the broadcast. He's like, yeah, well done, mate. You're off, but this is a Man City show, not farewell to Jake Humphries. Yeah, it was a very
Absolutely. And then there was the Man City legend that is Joleon Lescott.
He's got a gig there at BT or TNT, isn't it? It's going to be cool.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how he's done that. But I think it's hard. They're trying to toe the line, because I don't know if I see it on social. If you see the show, I think it's CBS doing America, and they have Carragher, Richards, Gary Henry. And that's very kind of, they toe the line of it being serious and comedy. But
yeah, I don't want that.
Messed up. Yeah.
Yeah. I know it sounds, you know, I don't see how difficult it is. I want, like, sort of the football debate, if you see what I mean, to be raised, not lowered.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Like, I'd rather sit there and be educated about something that I hadn't realised, you know, rather than having to listen to the banter bus, essentially, which is what you get with the, you know, some of the characters that you have on the telly now. I would like them to appoint people that, you know, like your Glenn Hoddles, and I know he's on TV, but you know, the types that can actually sit down and say, this is why they're playing, and this is why Gary Neville's actually so good. He can actually sit down, analyse a formation, and say, that's why they're playing this way. And I sometimes think, all right, I wouldn't have noticed that. Whereas, you know, there's without naming names, there's not other characters on those TV channels that we've just mentioned that can do that, I don't think. And that's part of the problem.
I suppose the job as a pundit is to educate the watcher. Like, we can banter and wind up. That's kind of the pub. Like, we want to then just tell us something we haven't spotted while
we're Absolutely. And so I think the level should be raised, not lowered. But I think they try and lower it to try and make it like you said, like you're in the pub. And, you know, it shouldn't be like that.
Good look at themselves. I mean, they're lucky rebranding. I think it's a good point to go, okay, that didn't work. How can we? I mean, Laura Woods is taking over. So that gives it instantly a different kind of vibe, because she's more than Jake Humphrey.
Absolutely.
We will
for anybody, I was going to say, for anybody listening, we are a 90s football podcast, in case you haven't listened to us before. We've
got too far there. That's go on brand, Huey. And today's show, which is going to just kind of be a little conflab, something we just we thought we'd talk about, because I think we take for advantage of what we have in the summer now. We all get to the point, and I saw you tweet it as well, Ed, that when at the end of the season, we'll sit and wait for the fixture list to come out. It's our classic go-to line. And we do that. Like, we immediately go, oh, no, there's no, you know, men's full tournament. Obviously, it's the Women's World Cup and there's a Euro under-21s, but there isn't a full spotlight on a tournament this summer. But football doesn't really ever stop now. Like,
no,
not with
never.
Social media, not, you know, you'll find somewhere, dark place to consume football.
Yeah.
Going back to the 90s, it almost was a blackout. And I thought what we do today, we'll talk about how we had that. We filled the gap, basically, in non-tournament years, what we did, the kind of how we found out about transfers, the new kit launches, bits and bobs. We thought we'd chat through that. That's kind of sums it up. Is that kind of a summary we're about to get into, Mr. James?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was definitely a barren era for finding out the information that we have now. So
we've also, something else we've done as well. It didn't happen as much in the 90s. There were a few, but Soccer Aid happened last weekend, which, whatever you think of it, and I have various views about Soccer Aid. Obviously, not its cause, but the people involved and some of the football, especially, I'll say. But we thought, what would happen if it happened in the 90s? And I think a friend of the show, Sid Lambert, did something similar on his Twitter feed and said what in his era of space. And we've had a go at it as well. So we'll do that at the end of the show, a few names, and have a chuckle at who we've come up with. But let's talk summer football in the 90s after this little advert.
Sit back and enjoy a nostalgic ride through the decade that truly changed the face of football. If the 90s are now retro, then it's time for a celebration. Welcome to Alive and Kicking, the 90s football podcast.
Right, welcome back to Alive and Kicking. And I say it's summer. I mean, it's actually sweltering heat outside at the moment. We're having one of those weeks in the UK where everyone just moans, including myself, about the weather. I'm in my sweat box of an office, not trying to get too sweaty. But so we're taking homage from that and getting inspiration from them, getting in the mood for summer and thinking about summer as we were growing up in the 90s, where we didn't have Twitter, we didn't have YouTube to go down and watch football when we needed to. So if it wasn't Euro 96 or World Cup 98, what did we do? What did we talk about? What did we consume? That's kind of the basis of what we're chatting about today. Ed, one of the big things, obviously, about the summer, I think, is where we started talking about how we could expand this topic, is transfers. Like, we're so on top of transfers now. Like, everyone kind of knows what's going to happen weeks in advance because everyone's on Twitter telling us Fabrizio Romano or whatever his name. But it wasn't always like that, sir, was it? Tell me how you consumed your transfer news. You know, it's June 1996 or whatever. Where are you going? What are you thinking? Who's going to?
I think what's interesting about that is how the times are different. Is the fact that I think you used to get all of your information from the written press.
Yeah.
So the written press actually played quite a very key role in transfers, and often you had to take it as gospel, really. That was the position, and there was no sort of counter responses that you get now saying, oh, sources close to, etc., have said that that's a load of old nonsense. It was, you know, if just make one up, if Paul Gascoigne was linked with Liverpool, for example, then you were like, oh, like, even looking back now, I'd be like, oh, do you remember that time Gascoigne was linked with Liverpool? Yeah. It was probably nonsense, because a lot of the transfers, rumours you hear now are nonsense. You have to find your good sources, like you said, Fabrizio Romano just seems to own that space completely.
50 million Twitter followers.
Yeah, and there's obviously a reason for that. And there are great journalists out there, you know, I'll rail them off the top of my head, but like Matt Law, for example, I think from the Telegraph is quite a good source for London clubs and the Midlands as well. I think he's an Aston Villa fan. And, you know, so you back then you just had to, half the time you just didn't even look who was writing. You just had to, you know, you look at the gossip. Remember, you used to look at a gossip column. It was like a football, they probably still haven't, but it was like a gossip column. And it was like, oh, you know, so-and-so's moving to Norwich and so-and-so's going to Leicester. And you're like, and then when obviously when they pitched up somewhere else, you thought, oh, how did that, How did that come about? But you just had to trust what was the written press. I suppose the only other way that you would find out the factual was when it actually happened, which was on teletext. And
well,
you would,
the teletext had like club call, didn't it? Like, and I am all for it. I was a complete sucker for club call, but now in later life, realised it was probably some teenager at the end of the other line.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yes, just to
absolutely.
Get charged 10p a minute or whatever it was.
Well, let's call it what it is. I mean, club call and its, you know, its various guises was the original clickbait.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
It was you know, Middlesbrough in for Brazilian superstar, and you'd be like, you know, they've already got Janinho. Who are they in for? And and then suddenly it would just be a load of old nonsense, and you know, so that's how we got our transfer rumours. And it, but I think the beauty of it though was that you were surprised when something did happen, and I think we've lost that a little bit.
Yeah, I hope
let's take
too much.
I think there's let's take Declan Rice, for example. Now, obviously, I'm going to date the podcast, because if I'm going to say now that Declan Rice looks like he might join Arsenal, and you know, if he's a Man United player by August or whatever, then obviously this looks stupid. But you know, Declan Rice, we've all known that Arsenal have been interested in Declan Rice for a long time, and Declan Rice's people have probably spoken to Arsenal's people about 3 months ago, and it's probably all just about, you know, signing off the detail, like Mason Mount is going to Man United. We all know this.
Yeah.
There's, you don't get you do still get some, but you don't get as many left field kind of where the hell did that come from scenarios.
Deadline day as well, the left field one.
Yeah. I mean,
but
you know, and we've talked before actually, and I know it's appreciated not summer, but like when Andy Cole left Newcastle to go to Man United, I mean, that was a big deal. There is no way in the world that someone is not going to use a fake Twitter account or tell someone on Twitter that is happening right now. It wouldn't just arrive, you know, it wouldn't just arrive at that point. And that's what
Alan Shearer, like the big summer of like to Newcastle. I don't remember that being too many reports of him going to Newcastle. I think he was linked with Man United, obviously everyone knows the story. And that, I always remember that broke during the, I was watching the Olympics. Deadline switched from, you know, whatever sport they were covering at the time, whatever, I don't know, roundup point, I don't know what it was, but breaking news and like Newcastle, and he was like, whoa, what's there?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no way in the world that you wouldn't know about that now.
Yeah.
That would have been a done, that would have been a done deal as soon as Euro 96 had finished and everybody knew about it. And the same when he went to Blackburn the first time, you know, it's just one of them things where's, you know, and that's how we got our summer transfers, in the fact that, you know, take Roy Keane, for example. Roy Keane was going to Blackburn. That's what's written in the press. And then suddenly he's going to Man United. And you find out about it when he's standing there with the old-fashioned sort of scarf aloft, you know, in the air, or doing something on the pitch.
I think he had a hard hat. I've got a picture of him wearing Old Trafford being redeveloped at that.
Oh, yeah, it might have been something to do with the Stretford end being completed or something along. Did he have that? But yeah, and it's stuff like that. You don't, you know, even I think we're just we're spoon-fed to the absolute maximum now transfer dealings. Even, you know, not to be disparaging, like with QPR transfers, for example, you would know broadly who they're interested in right now if it's all over the, you know, it's all over Twitter or QPR chats and the message boards, and some of it might be nonsense and some of it might not be. But back then it was like, obviously the famous Baggio is going to QPR. I mean, you'll always have that. And I think that goes back to my original point in the fact that it was probably made up and it was probably nonsense.
Yeah, Ray Wilkins is the only link.
They were like, oh, he's played in Italy.
Yeah,
who's, he knows Baggio. Who's famous in Italy? Baggio, let's do
that'll
that
do.
Then.
That'll do, I mean, I've told this story before, that I always, when I used to do a paper round in the late 90s, like, that was part of the fun during the summer, that I would pull out the paper and see what the latest stories were. And then I'd go and tell my mates, and I became Sky Sports News at that point, because I was the one doing, I always remember pulling out paper and seeing Marcel Desailly was about to sign for Chelsea. And at that point, Chelsea hadn't become the machine that they are, certainly now, but even in the next decade. And you were like, what? My was somebody who was playing in Serie A, who was the biggest league in the world at that point. He was revered, and he was like coming, because the Premier League was still signing, not kind of has-beens, because I'm never called Burkham and Klinsman that, but like Burkham maybe not, but like people slightly towards the end of their career, we weren't getting names like Desai, and that was kind of like, I always remember like, whoa, that was kind of, I told all my friends about it, and then the next thing you see, you don't hear anything until he's rocking up at Stamford Bridge holding the shirt, and it's like, okay, he's there, and
then he is there. It was true,
And it's kind of, I'd kind of missed that, but then at the same time, the sucker who sits on Twitter all day.
Exactly, I'm just as bad. That's the thing. I complain about it. But I still do it. And I think actually, you raise a good point there. I think Sky Sports News had a massive change in all of this. So the last year of the decade, Sky Sports News became a thing. It became its channel in its own right. I think it was on 4:05, if I remember rightly. Anyway, it became a thing, and you could sit there for hours on end watching transfer news. Of course, you know, you didn't realise then that it was just constantly on repeat. Yeah. So you'd sit there and wait, oh, there might be some news at 2 o'clock that they didn't have at 1 o'clock. Whereas actually, it's just on a loop. Yeah. So that's when the world became a bit smaller, and then obviously the internet just took over. And then
it's completely twisted now. Now they're the other end, because they just copy what's there. Just like, oh, British on Twitter.
So yeah.
It is kind of redundant, really, because
to an extent,
made news the place.
I think Sky Sports News. I think Sky Sports News, to an extent, is for almost two types of people. One is people like my dad, who's just not on Twitter and will not take social media on, and will turn on Sky Sports News to catch up on a few bits. And then it's also for people our age and younger who also don't want to subscribe to the sort of Twitters of this world and still want to be out of the social media space. So there are people still out there that will read the newspapers and watch Sky Sports News for their transfer activity, but it's just got a hell of a lot smaller.
Yeah. I hate the Sky Sports News has got really cash. I know this is a really old man, but like when I watch clips from like when it passes me by, they're all sitting there in like t-shirts and shorts and and stuff. And I'm like, what happened? Was it Mufti Day or something?
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to Sky Sports News. At one point the other week, I saw someone doing some sort of freestyle rap on the final day. And he was like,
I don't know if I'm one of them.
Struggling for content. And he wasn't even good. Like, I'm no sir, but I know a decent bar or two like, when I watched it. And it was terrible. But I think
Sky Sports News now looks like a permanent non-uniform day.
Yeah,
you know, like when you pay a quid. So what? I always like it with people
in this part of London. But
really?
My wife never understands as well. I don't know, but
I don't know what that means. But so that's what it looks like to me. But that's the transfer element, really. I think you know that it has changed a hell of a lot, and we complain that we get too much information now. Of course we do.
I do love to be shocked, but at the same time, I also like, we'll talk, you know, it's kit launch season as well, and most of my day is spent going through all the kit.
Well, I bet it is.
Accounts going, oh, there's, you know, Stockport. Oh, that's a new home kit from Stockport. And I'm ticking off which I haven't seen yet and things like that. But we'll talk about kits in just a second.
Just on kits, because the two are kind of linked in one way. Right. So I tell you what, one thing that drives me mad, right? And, you know, I'm not, you know, a massive kit lover or whatever. It's not, you know, I don't enjoy the collars and all that stuff. But people send me kits, right? And they'll go, oh, look at this new Aston Villa home shirt or whatever. What do you think of that? And I'm like, is that even it?
Yeah.
Like, that's like a rumour in itself, because then another kit comes out. So it's almost like kits are now the transfers of the 1990s.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I know it's someone's taken a dodgy photo with their phone in some warehouse in Singapore where they're transported, and you're like, is that real? I'm not sure.
I think I've seen 10 Arsenal kits and about 17 Chelsea kits in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, Chelsea one's really grown, because I'm a sucker for looking at those photos, but normally they're all pretty similar, but the Chelsea one's gone from one extreme to the other.
Yeah, like, yeah, there was
this colour and now it's this colour. Yeah.
It looked like Chelsea, and then suddenly they're now Everton as a football club. Or, you know, it's just very weird.
I think the Chelsea one's been delayed because of the sponsor.
Right,
they're out sponsoring, they're trying to find a new deal, but I don't know.
They're still sponsored by Amiga or Cause in my head.
That's exactly. That's what we would want and stuff. But I mean, again, kits are slightly. See that we've kind of moved on slightly to that subject. Kits were something as well. Like, they're such big launches now. Like, you get countdowns on social media. You'll get things like, you know, I've been, as in my profession, I've been to kit launches where they do a big event and they bring the kit out like a catwalk and stuff like that. I once interviewed Gareth Bale literally days before he's moved to Real Madrid. And him saying, "Oh no, I'm going nowhere. I'm wearing a new kit." And he literally left for Real Madrid.
He literally had the cab booked.
Yeah. Like, roll him out at that event. It was such a complete try to hoodwink the media because he was there.
I would argue that he
doesn't just have 3 days, as we all know. So
I would argue that's Levy trying to hoodwink the fans into buying a new kit, to be perfectly honest. But
and Under Armour trying to make their way into America, because I think he was on the billboard in America. But yeah, I mean, that definitely happened. I mean, kits in general, obviously, it's a different time. But especially in the early 90s, replicas weren't that, in terms of buying them, they weren't that big a deal. You know, you could buy it at the club shop and that was kind of it. They weren't kind of a thing. They only changed every 2 seasons at least, some even more. You know, now we see clubs change every year. Bar Brentford, you didn't change it last season.
Well, good for Brentford.
Yeah, but the first time you found about kits was either, as we've already spoken about, where you'd see, you know, Stan Collymore, the one that always comes to mind, Stan Collymore signed for Aston Villa wearing that away kit, kind of blue, sky blue with the band across it. I love it.
Yeah, I know the one.
And I remember when he signed, I was like, "Oh, look at that." And I was more interested in that they had a nice away kit rather than Stan Collymore had moved to Aston Villa. But that's when you'd find out, and I always find this kind of like, was this clearly on purpose? Those adverts I used to get in Match and Shoot, which tell you who the stockists were. It wasn't like it was JD Sports or.
Oh, no.
It was some random hit soccer something. I can't even remember the name of the companies now.
Yeah.
And then some would be modelled shots from some, you know, good-looking chap, and then some would just be hits and stuff. There wouldn't even be great shots of it. It'd just be like, oh, this is the new Rangers kit. Oh, this is the new Everton kit. And then but there was no big deal. It was just kind of like, this is what they're wearing. It's like,
I quite like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I find that. Right, there's two things, I think, it's like a rant now, but there's two things that bother me about kits in these days. Is one, you've mentioned it already about how they change every year. I mean, God bless parents of kids, like my kids show an interest in football, but they're nowhere near the kit buying stage. But like, I've got mates that, you know, I've got, you know, boys and girls that want a new kit, and they want it every year because they want to keep up with their mates. And you're basically having to sort of budget for an extra 100 quid every year. Or 200 quid every year, depending on how many children you've got, for buying new kits. And I think that's one, I think that's outrageous. But I think also it used to be every other year, and I think that's fair. But it's all about money, you know, the money making side of it now. And kit launches, really. I mean, can you hear yourself? There's like someone walking. I know you do. You love all that glamour and, you know, Rasmus has, but there's a launch for someone walking down a catwalk wearing a Tottenham shirt. I mean, behave yourself. Yeah. You wouldn't see Glenn Hoddle do that, or Gazza, or you know, or Paul Stewart.
If you troll screw Twitter or even, you know, picture agents in my job, kit launches sometimes they're always done in the stadium, and then quick picture, and usually you'd have a glamour model. So I'm thinking your Sam Foxes, your cat needs. I think there's a famous Tottenham one with Teddy Sheringham.
There is indeed.
At the time, very low key, quick photo. You'd either see it in Match or Shoot or in the club program or whatever you got your hands off over the summer. That was kind of it. Yeah, I went to when QPR were promoted to the Premier League in 2011. They got Nike as a very, very late kit deal. Which meant that they had no time to design a bespoke kit. So they had to pick what they call a catalogue shirt, which is, if you go through Nike's catalogue, it's what you see Sunday league teams. It's basically a complete template.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be, and they do it for the lower league. It's one of my pet hates in kit design. So they had no time to do it. So I got a call from the club PR at the time, who's no longer there, so I'm not getting him in trouble at all, saying, "If you're coming down, I must warn you, they're thin hoops and they don't go all the way around. Everyone's going to hit, shit's going to hit the fan." This is how particular everything was at the time.
Oh,
at this big launch in Nike London and stuff, and it was Ned and Anua, and I think it was, is it Joey Barton? Might have been. I can't remember, because I interviewed Ned and Anua at the time. And it's not a nice kit. It's a very much, you could buy it in a Nike store without the brand, QPR brand in for like a tenner. Yeah. Just blue and white stripes. It wasn't even hoops. But they'd done this massive thing for it, knowing that it was going to
It was kind of
like a bomb because the kit was very nice. I mean, the third kit was literally all white. There was nothing to it. It was literally a white shirt and white shorts. There wasn't and a round collar. But
well, if I was doing a review, right, of modern football, right, and I had
we're
to give
back today, aren't we?
And I had to right now, if I had to give, yeah, we are actually. If I had to give recommendations of things that should go back to maybe what they used to be, right, kits are brought out every 2 years, and also you have to wear your old kit on the last day, your new kit for next season on the last day of the Premier League season or that football league. To then showcase it, but if you're playing in a cup final,
that's a no.
Yeah, you have to go back to the one that you wore all the way through because Tottenham did that, didn't they? In the early 90s, I think they were the first to kind of to do that.
There was a financial contractual reason to that that I can't remember off the top of my head.
Well, I think it was the fact that Tottenham had no money.
Yeah,
at
basically,
the time.
And they need to show that they could make some money. I know. I'm not the big. I like seeing the new kit on the last day of the season, and I think, but at the same time, then this is so sad, and I can't believe I'm admitting this, but I think I've done it on Twitter before. I also don't like getting used to seeing it because for me, like when the new season kicks off, I like you know new kits, new players. It's a fresh season. I don't be like I've seen that already, so I kind of I almost half watch a team that are in like the Arsenal Wolves game at the end of the season when they're wearing their new kit. I kind of was like, I'm not going to fully watch this because I don't want to get used to Arsenal in that kit.
Oh my God. If there is anyone still listening to us, two 40-year-old blokes just ranting about kits and nonsense, then who do you think needs more help at this point in terms of, you know, football? I think it's Ash, isn't it? It's got to be.
We move on from kits because I think I'm showing my gut. But yeah, I mean, kind of bow on it. Those adverts were kind of like they were king, weren't they? In matches,
yeah.
You flick through and be like, "Oh my god!" And they go around on Twitter all the time, and you see.
Yeah.
That's
absolutely.
How best you find out. The only other thing we'll say about kits, and this is like my holy grail ghost of 90s memorabilia. When the Sun used to do their kind of new season preview, I don't know if I spoke about this before.
Used
to do like a poster type thing in the paper where it go across the whole two, you know, sheets of, you know, newspaper. Obviously, it's quite big, and a kit for every like new kits for every team. I used to put them. I think it was even center.
Yeah.
I used to put them on my wall. And do you know what? It's one of the few things I think I've not seen since the moment I had them.
Yeah.
Like no one's taking a picture of them. When I did a Live and Kicking book, like I'm talking, you know, it's almost over a decade ago. I even contacted the Sun and said, "Oh, have you got these?" And they didn't even have them on archive. So I don't know.
The reason you don't get them anymore is because they have to do it every year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Saves the printing.
It's just no point, you know.
I don't mind them every year. I think maybe also you like keep the away kit. I kind of like we start afresh. I feel sorry for teams like even my own and Sunderland and Sheffield United and Southampton where, you know, we've got striped shirt. What the hell do we do?
Yeah, Celtic's another one. It's like, oh, the sort of the green and white hoops are 7 centimetres longer this season or something.
The collar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which annoys me when you get a Wolves or Nottingham Forest and it's just all they do is change the collar. It's like you've got a plain, you know, like surface. Like add something. Oh, I'm going too much.
You've gone to that dark place. Yeah. Come back.
Podcast, but I mean, talking match and shoot, I mean, they were a good way in general of because they didn't stop in the summer and they were another kind of gateway, weren't they? When there was a new signing, there'd be posters. I always remember you'd flick through, and then I think even Match used to have like a spread that had every at least top flight team, and I think even went into sort of the Football League.
Yeah,
again, probably somebody on their staff making up gossip or taking it from the paper, but that's what you read and believed, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And in your matches and your shoots, I think towards the start of the season, and you would get the predictions for the year in terms of who was going to win the league and all that. And I appreciate you get that now, but maybe that's just the way I'm looking back at it. It seemed to mean more then because you were starved of football. Whereas because of, you know, with, you know, social media and the like, you know, if you want to know who Jamie Carragher thinks is going to win the league next year, you could probably just ask him on Twitter and there might be a conversation started about it. Which is, you know, maybe that's a good thing, maybe not. But yeah, your matches and your shoots were, that's where you saw your new signings. That's where your posters came from your bedroom walls or, you know, what have you. Tell you one thing, actually, I've written down here that, did you ever get fixture cards? Is that a thing? Each club. Didn't each club have one? Wasn't it like a fixture card that was kind of folded into three or four different ways? And did they not? Did each club not?
I think it was like a club membership.
I wasn't sure if the clubs provided them or like the magazines did it. I just couldn't remember.
I think I used to get when I was a QPR Junior R or whether it was called. Yeah. At the time, used to get. Yeah, I know it. Cardboard fine, and you'd fill in the fixtures really tiny little boxes. Yeah. And have a space for the two cups.
Whereas now you just look it up online. Yeah. But yeah, there was that, and I think one fun thing that is different now is pre-season friendlies.
Yeah.
I'll just go back to the fixture thing. Actually, that was something. The fixtures coming out was a big, big deal.
Yeah.
In the 90s, because it seemed the gap from the end of the season to the middle of June when the fixtures came out always felt huge. It gave you something to look forward to, and then you realise that it's 6 or 7 weeks or whatever till the start of August, and then it's when it all kick off again because, oh, bloody hell, I've got 6 or 7 weeks to wait. They came out the other day, and for a lot of people, I don't think it even registered. Some people I spoke to didn't even know that they were.
Because it was like 3 days after the Champions League final. But
yeah, and like England, as we speak, you know, England are playing, is it tonight they're playing? Yeah. I don't even know. And you know, those games are still going on. And like you say, the football season, I mean, complain about it, but it doesn't seem to end anymore. No. There might be a space in late July or whatever when it does, but then actually
Women's World Cup starts.
Absolutely, and then there'll probably be Champions League qualifiers, or you know, it doesn't stop anymore.
Almost as a joke of like, I'm going, oh, this is the final game, and then there'll be another cup final, and I'm like, oh no, this is this is it, and then tonight I'll be watching England, and then she'll be like, the season. I was like, I know there's a couple of qualifiers.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it doesn't stop.
That's exactly the conversation I had my wife, because I said about, you know, going out to watch the relegation scrap, and I said, oh, this is the last day of the season. And then of course, the next week, I was like, oh, I'm just popping out to watch the cup final. She said, I thought last week was the last day of the season. I said, yeah, that's the cup final. And then, of course, you've got the Champions League final as well. Just going to stick this on.
But, you know what? They ask, but they immediately stop listening after once you start explaining it, like saying, well, that was the league, this is the cup. And then there's halfway through that sentence, she's gone, no, I don't worry about it. Like, oh, don't ask.
Funny enough, I think the Champions League is the one game my wife actually does watch from start to finish, because I don't know whether she enjoys the sort of razzmatazz beforehand that has become the sort of Super Bowl of European football. But anyway, we digress.
Yeah, like you also used to get as well the team tabs, which I always sort of stamp my feet and say that Kick magazine still do them. We are not doing them this season. I won't bore you with the details, but for the last few seasons, we have done them. But not quite the scale that Match especially used to do them.
Yeah, cool. Match used to go
to
town on that.
It was a massive poster. You had the team tabs. You could fill in the players. You could fill in the transfers, the cups and everything. And you'd start pretty much in August going, going to do this every week, going to move the tabs around. And then by like mid-September, like you'd lost interest. Half the tabs were missing down the back of your bed. But that was still part of it. It was like, oh, God, the season's coming. There's the team tabs are here. And I've got to get that issue of Match. Well, not that I missed one, but that was really part of the excitement, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and it was kind of, that was something as well. I was digressing again, but yeah, the first three games of the season was when you found out what the league table was.
Yeah.
At the start of the season. I know we're talking about summer, but I suppose it's kind of connected. But yeah, and then pre-season friendlies.
Yes.
Yeah. So now, Man United, Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham, your Everton's and your Leeds and you know, all them, they all jet set around the world, don't they? Like they.
Fulham are in America,
Fulham are in America.
Yeah.
Is that what you just said? Right. Do you see what I mean? And back in the 90s when pre-season friendlies kicked off, not many clubs went. I remember Man United went to South Africa once. I think.
Yeah.
Them and Arsenal. Didn't they play Arsenal in a pre-season game? I think that was around the time Mandela was becoming president. But yeah, so there was that. But you didn't really get many transfers. So obviously I've talked on here before about being of, you know, being like family of Irish descent and stuff. We used to go over there for holidays because, you know, we don't like the sun. So we used to go over there.
Sunny Island, yeah.
Yeah, and about, it was 1990, so I was only about seven or eight or whatever, but in about 40 minutes from where we were staying, Man United were playing Derry City.
Oh,
right? Right, so this is Man United, like one of the biggest clubs in the world, and they just sort of happened to hop foot it over to Ireland for a few days.
They would have just won the FA Cup as well, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they had. Yeah, and it's quite an interesting story. But we went to the game with sort of two or three Irish lads that my dad knew from the local pub. We always used to go to the same place as holiday. And so we went through, and we were driving through this area, which now is in Derry or Londonderry, depending on your persuasion. And they just turned around to us and said, right, if anybody stops us, let us do the talking. We're like, oh my God. And now I'm aware now that we went through a very sort of Republican area of the city, and that's where the stadium is. And we went to this game, and I was absolutely 7 or 8. I was absolutely petrified to speak. I mean, after a while, it was all right. But I remember like Gary Pallister was playing, Dennis Irwin was playing. Dennis Irwin had just signed, I think. So yeah, Dennis Irwin was playing. I think Les Seeley might have been in goal. It was that era.
Yeah.
I mean, the people of Derry now, or anywhere in Ireland or Scotland or whatever, Wales, whatever, they're not going to get Man United just tip up for a pre-season friendly, are they?
No.
You know, you're not.
Even if they do, it'd be like a Man United 11. So you'd get.
Yeah, without doubt.
You'd get their youth team and the tea lady and everyone else.
Yeah,
so.
Without doubt. Yeah, one of my local sides down here are playing. They're playing a Chelsea 11 in a couple of weeks' time. And you look at it's basically the reserves. It's players, it's youth team players, essentially.
Well, they'll be all right because Chelsea have like 500 players. So you might see a few.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they've all got to play somewhere. But I was thinking, oh, maybe I'll have a watch of that. But I probably won't bother. Yeah. Pre-season was just so, so different. Whereas now you see all the goals. You've formed an opinion on Liverpool's new signing, for example, before the season's even started, based on the fact that they might have banged in a couple of goals against Juventus in a game in America.
I don't like seeing those sort of big pre-season games either. Like, I don't really want to see like Liverpool Juventus because that should be saved for a European night. Like, I don't really need to see that in pre-season. I'd actually rather see like Liverpool versus Hartlepool. That feels like a pre-season game. I know that everyone needs to, you know, they want to sell tickets in wherever they go to these games, but
that's what it's all about. I mean, it's about Man United playing Barcelona in California somewhere and it being 100,000 people. That's what,
from business sense, we're not stupid.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not sitting here thinking that Man United versus Derry makes more commercial sense than Man United versus Barcelona in California. But
Jurgen Klinsmann make his debut at Watford in a pre-season.
He did, and Rudulic made his at Gillingham.
Excellent.
Right, so
just to the people of Gillingham, but
or even Watford. But you know, it's just like they're not. You know, Jurgen Klinsmann had come from Monte Carlo, for Christ's sake. You know, and Rudulic had come from sort of Sampdoria and Milan and stuff. And then suddenly they're in English lower league. Well, you know, I know Watford have improved and stuff, but they're English lower league grounds. And you know, that's to me, that's, you know, that you don't get that. You don't get that anymore. That's what we did in the summer. We watched, if you could get to one that was near your house, you watched lower league footballers take on Premiership footballers, essentially.
The only thing I can remember differently was the Nikita Cup that they used to do.
Yeah.
Leeds played Sampdoria and David Batty took exception to, and he got sent off in a pre-season friendly, which I was hilarious. How annoyed are you that day that you have to be sent off in a friendly game?
Yeah. There was that. They played the Makita. Yeah, there was Makita Cup up at Leeds. There was one at Tottenham.
Arsenal played.
Yeah, there was one at Highbury as well. I think there was one at Wembley as well. I might be wrong, but yeah. So we've talked about Makita before and glossed over the fact that you and
what
I don't
Makita?
Know. It's all like power tools and stuff. Way out of our league.
Yeah, that's why we don't know.
Way out of our league. And those tournaments, but then even then in the '90s they became more commercialised. They became the Umbro Cup.
Yeah.
So not just the international one. They became there was one at Nottingham Forest. Yeah. There was one at Nottingham Forest, I think.
Emirates Cup. They do, don't they? Still
and then because one of them famously was where Shearer got injured, wasn't it, at Everton?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that's weird as well. Newcastle were playing Everton in a pre-season friendly.
Premier League, they'll do that this summer. I think the Americans.
Yeah, duh. definitely. Weird. Always weird. Yeah, there was one example a couple of years ago where two teams played in a friendly, and then they were playing each other on the first day of the season.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Nah, no.
Oh, we're ranting today, right?
Yeah, I mean, we started off this podcast with saying what we did in the summer for football kids, and we've just basically ranted about how today is not as good, yeah. Which we're probably hitting our target audience.
Probably,
actually,
yeah.
You know.
What was I going to ask you as well? Because something I used to do, not always, because I'm terrible as a footballer, but did you ever do the summer schools or the summer soccer camp type?
Oh, yeah. Basically, you mean where your mum and dad basically didn't have anywhere else to put you for a week. Yeah. I did a couple of those, which were actually, as a kid, they were really enjoyable. And they would get an ex-pro, a current pro, to come down and so there was one independent one I did. I can't remember the name of it now, but it was one independent one I did. So we obviously I'm sort of just outside London, as you know, but we had Justin Edinburgh come along. God bless him. He came 2 years in a row actually, and always remember. Obviously, footballers earn a lot more money than your average Joe, but not maybe not as much back then. He turned up in this old banger of a. It was a BMW, right? But it was like an old banger BMW. Do you know what I mean? And
feeling the pinch of Tottenham as well. So
yeah, and but I tell you what, I always remember this. He stayed, and he answered. He had no real obligation to be there, I don't think. He answered every single question from every kid, no matter how stupid it was. And then one year they brought down this young kid from Arsenal who'd just broken into the first team, and he had these ginger locks, and it was Ray Parlour. And he was just as good as well. So I did do a couple of those.
So there was one locally to me that was just called Ted's Soccer School. And I don't know who Ted was. I don't know if I've ever met the elusive Ted.
Yeah.
But I remember you got a certificate and a little trophy at the end of it, which meant everything. So I did that one for a couple of years. And then I did one with it was Nicky Johns Soccer School.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
I didn't even know who Nicky Johns was, let alone that he was a goalkeeper for QPR in the 80s.
Yeah.
He came along and he, again, stayed. I think he was there. It was kind of his thing. So I think he was there quite a lot. And I think he'd only recently retired. I don't think he was still, if he was, he was very lower league at the time.
Yeah. You've just triggered a memory there. I don't know why I've forgotten this, but I did one at Cheltenham Athletics training ground as well.
Oh, okay.
That was it was their way of getting the community in to play, but then they would also pick the best kids for then nick them for their academy.
Yeah.
Obviously, I wasn't one of them, but I was in this penalty shootout competition, and I got to take a penalty against Bob Boulder. Do you remember Bob Boulder?
That is Bob Boulder. Yeah,
he was more of an 80s character. He was at Liverpool once, I think, but he played for Sheffield Wednesday. But he was at Cheltenham towards the end of his career, and the penalty, like those who got through to a final or whatever, got to take a penalty against Bob Boulder, and I scored. Absolutely miraculously. I don't know how I did it, but so I can say that I've scored a penalty against a top pro. I'm going to call Bob Boulder a top pro.
Yeah, well, it was at the time. It wasn't quite. Yeah. Was it Salmon? Mike Salmon they had as a goalkeeper?
Mike Salmon, yeah. Salmon was there.
I don't remember how good he was. I just remember him calling Mike Salmon as a kid. Well, that was hilarious that he was called Salmon.
Yeah,
of those videos he used to get as well. I remember watching that in the summer holidays. School over and over again.
Yeah, that Cole Lieber, and he was like the star striker. But there was this one time, me and my mate, we needed to just tell this story quickly. Me and my mate needed the toilet. Actually, the school had finished for the week, right? But we needed the toilet, and the guy running the thing said, "Go into the main training complex." Like go into the. It wasn't grand as it probably is now, and we walked in and we turned left when we should have turned right. Anyway, cut long story short, there was a bloke in the bath. Walked in and was like, oh, okay. And it was like, you're right, lads. And I was like, we're just looking at the toilet. He says, oh, yeah, it's just over there on the right. And it was Keith Peacock, Gavin Peacock's dad.
Gavin's dad, yeah.
So I'm like, it's a bit weird that I've seen Keith Peacock in the bath. But anyway, excellent. And there's no, and obviously we live in this day and age of make it safeguarding everything. Everything was all right. Don't you worry, Keith was a very nice guy.
Before we delve into our 90s soccer raid celebrities, the only other thing I've got on my list was, and this is dear to our hearts because we actually did this later in our teenage years and our drinking years, but like watching videos is the other way we used to do it. Like you'd have your season video, you'd have race for the championship,
goals galore. Yeah, you'd basically try
if you were allowed.
Yeah, you basically tried to obtain as much football video as you could. Yeah, I think the race for the championship was definitely the that was definitely a thing. But then obviously Sky took that over, really, didn't they, with the Premiership years or whatever they call it. But yeah, and even in our later years, that's what we watched. You know, we're so bored waiting for football to come on. So
I hate the season, like YouTube kind of put pay to season. I'd buy them now. See, I mean, watching this season for QPR would be bloody horrible.
I was going to say, it's like the 10 best throw-ins or something. But
Exactly. But like, I had it for a good 20 years. I had that collection on my shelf of every season. You had a video compilation that season. You had interviews. But I suppose, actually, Stu, from Stu Footy's Flashback, if I can say it, he put a great tweet a couple of weeks ago. He managed to, he's got far too much time on his hands, but I love him. He'd combined all the intros to the 1990-91 season reviews for all the time.
And
put it into one video. And I remember, the QPR one is one of my most vivid because that's the first video I really remember watching. It's got Roy Wegley on the front, and I remember the it's Martin Tyler who does all the intros. But clearly, Stu, too much of time on your hands that day. But
I'm not saying anything.
Yeah, great tweet, I loved it. So but no, I love. Yeah, that was another way of doing it. So I think that's everything from kind of my list. I mean, I did put a picture up on Twitter earlier of the classic wind floater football, because if you weren't, watching football, then you were playing it, and it was always one of those footballs that you would kick, and even in the summer, and it would go one other way, and Super Ellie written on it for some reason, which I never quite understood what meant.
You basically could be Roberto Carlos with that football. Yeah. If you bent it with the outside of the foot, it would go anywhere, and it was like, you are that good.
Yeah,
but it just happened
like
to be
one, not quite a level one. They used to do like an in between that was like heavy plastic.
Yeah,
the balls that I liked, because the
I used to love the noise that made when you bounced it on the street, like on the road when you were going towards the park.
Yeah.
In fact, my kids have got a ball similar-ish to that now, and sometimes I find myself doing it, which is really sad.
Right.
Why am I admitting this stuff?
We've gone to areas. Let's end it now.
I started by saying you need therapy for kits, and now I've been talking about Keith Peacock and bouncing footballs on pavements. Yeah, it's me that's the problem.
The description to this episode is going to be fun to write, I tell you.
Yeah.
Right, so let's finish the little fun game of, so imagine this is, I don't know, mid-90s maybe, it's Soccer Aid. Jonathan Wilkes will still be there because obviously he it's the only job he's ever had. So he's put it on, and he's rounded up celebrities and footballers from the, I mean, I've only done celebrities, so that's probably stay on that because it's quite funny, from the era. And they're playing on live on ITV or Channel 3, as we used to call it on our terrestrial TV. What motley crew have you put together, Mr. Chase?
Well, I've got five or six. I didn't get down to a full 11, I'll be honest with you. But I think, looking at my list here, you always have to have a soap star, don't you, in inverted commas, that looks like a footballer but can probably just about kick a ball. I've gone for Des Barnes from Coronation Street. Bit of a ladies' man was Des from memory. Plus his surname was Barnes, and I just thought anyone who was called Barnes was obviously going to be good at football. I've gone for Des. So there you go.
Yeah, should we aber it? So
yeah, go for it.
He's in a position. I've just kind of, although he was the first person I thought of, again, what does this say about your mind? I did once see Jamie Theakston in a charity game in the 90s. I know he was a good goalkeeper. He was very alive and kicking at the time. So but he was far too cool to be on my list at the time. I thought of Bob Carroll, geez.
Really?
Don't know why. Big Tash, spits the dog to his side, sticking in goal. He's quite a big fellow, isn't he?
Yeah, so, I suppose that could be an option. Yeah.
Yeah, Surprise was a massive, show at in the 90s. So I've gone, a bit of Bob Carroll G's in for him, first pick of mine.
Why not? Well, on that kind of weird sort of theme, I've gone for you've got to have a runner. You've got to have someone that's fit and somebody that can get the team going.
Yeah.
And who better to go with than Mr. Motivator?
Oh, yes.
It was like you open your front door. He was there in the morning. So
ran to the 90s.
It's very good. So Mr. Motivator has got to be in there. I think, funny enough, I think he's a sort of play that you'd have brought on for 5 minutes and then sort of subbed him off for like Paul Merson or something. I don't know, but you know, it's you know, you've got to get the talent in there somehow, haven't you?
I've gone on that route as one of mine as well. Like, there's always an athlete from another sport as well.
Yeah,
quite fast, someone who's quite fit, and somebody who seemed to always be on telly in that era. Anyway, greatest laugh probably of the era. Chris Akabusi would be involved.
Yeah, there's absolutely no way. To be honest, I don't think you pick a 90s 11 on anything without picking Chris Akabusi, but that's just me.
He'd be on everything anyway.
Yeah, didn't he get, my memory's going the older I get, but wasn't he on Record Breakers?
Probably.
Chris Akabusi. Yeah, like towards the end of the decade. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was on that. Yeah, you've got to have Chris Akabusi, haven't you?
That's really as well.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say Colin Jackson for some reason. Do you remember the hurdler? Yeah. And then, of course, you had Cyril Regis's cousin, John Regis. Yeah, the runner. But, you've got a bit of Chris Akabusi, haven't you? My next one's, you know, I love this because I just love the name. You've got to have Reg Hollis from The Bill.
Yes, Bill would be all over it.
The Bill cast. We're definitely all over it. You'd have to have Reg Hollis.
I went to a Summer Fate once, which was with my, again, you've triggered a memory here, with my auntie, so it would have been where she lived, like Croydon Way, and there would be the Bill there. I can't remember his name now. I can see his face. Quite a big bloke, brown hair. Oh, I'm going to have to Google
it. Not Tony Stamp.
Yes. I knew you'd know who I mean.
Big Tony Stamp, yeah. Yeah.
It was him and one of the female officers, but I can't remember her face. But yeah, and I was like, he's kind of probably one of my first brushes with Fate.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's a Crystal Palace fan, that lad. Actually, well, probably stands to reason while he was over in Croydon.
Yeah, that would make sense. Definitely, that would make sense. TV wise, have I got? Well, kind of. Yeah, I'm somebody who was kind of the originator of the broom cupboard. So, because we're not allowed to talk about Philip Schofield at the moment,
so, I was wondering where we were going with that.
Exactly. Yeah. Andy Crane. Do you remember Andy?
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah. Andy Crane.
Big lad. He could be a goalie.
Andy Crane to me actually looked like a footballer.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but
he was a bit gangly, wasn't he?
Yeah, true. But even in my head, right, if I think what Lee Martin looked like for Man United, for some reason Andy Crane pops in my head first. I don't know why. But good one. I like that.
Yeah, in the broom cupboard. You can bring Ed the Duck as well if you want.
Jesus, I wondered where you were going with that broom cupboard for a minute.
This isn't a podcast for that nonsense.
Yeah, we're not allowed to say. Right. We're not allowed to say.
We've got a few more. Go on, who else you got? You got two.
I've got, I think you've got to have what the popular shows are. Yeah. You've got to have someone from a very popular sort of background or show. You're not going to get a Chris Evans. He was too cool. But so he would have sent Will. Do you remember Will from TFI Friday? Yeah. And, you know, they used to go down the slides and all that sort of stuff in a studio. Will was very much the architect of TFI Friday, I think. And, he'd have definitely played wearing his glasses. He'd have had to wear the glasses. He was the sort of guy that couldn't take those glasses off, I don't think, even when he was asleep. You've got to have Will, haven't you? I think he's that sort of popular.
They did do that thing late in the night called the Soccer Sixes, which is a little bit like cooler, and I think just to get pissed.
Liam Gallagher played as well, I think. Was that on telly?
I just remember pictures of it in magazines.
Yeah, that's what exactly. Yeah. I think that just goes to show the point, doesn't it?
Yeah. I've gone down the athlete route as well. Again, TV show popular at the time. Was there many more shows popular than Gladiators? You've got to have Gladiator, haven't you?
Oh, without doubt.
I mean, I haven't picked one in particular, but obviously Wolf would be a crowd favourite. Yeah. Because you could boot him.
Was it Cobra as well?
Cobra, he could hang tough was his game, so he could have been it. Or, you know, he could be lad at the back, Shadow.
I actually, if this was real, I wouldn't put it past ITV to have John Anderson as the referee for the whole game.
Totally.
And he would actually stand in the centre circle and say, ready, and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, definitely.
Totally. We're turning it into a knockout a bit, but yeah.
Yeah.
And, but that's the 90s, it would have been.
Absolutely. And now... I've got one. I've got one more, and it's somebody I haven't mentioned for a year, about a year, And he's going to play left back, and that is Finlay Quay.
He
definitely played left back for Wigan in the 2000s. I will die on that hill.
Welcome back to the show,
Finlay Quay. Yeah, I mean, somebody that I didn't even remember until we started watching those Top of the Pop shows, if I'm honest.
Oh, they were great.
Finlay Quay. They'd have a musician that nobody really remembers too much about now, if I'm honest.
Yeah, no, he would probably have been in that stock of sixties as well, I imagine. I bet he's the kind of guy that does that. I had a few more because I went a bit crazy when I was doing my list. So I had the pop star Kavanagh, because he kind of guy that he was popular at the time. He's, you know, one for the girls who would be watching, and probably shit at football though.
Yeah. So, without a doubt.
The British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith, obviously. Bit of WWF in there. He was the most popular one.
Well, that was very, very popular back then. So
I don't ever remember him liking football. I'm all of, you know, that's another part of my skin. Don't ever remember him linked to football.
Yeah, but is that a prerequisite to playing a game like this? I mean, Boris Johnson played in a game like this once, and you know, he didn't like football.
Anyone who saw Fury have a shot the other day will know that he probably doesn't like football.
I watched the last 20 minutes. I missed that bit. And I can't be bothered to go back and find it, but I've heard
it's not worth to do that.
You know, I've heard from various people that it was quite amusing.
Yeah, you mentioned soap stars earlier. I had Mark Little, because he seemed to be all over our screens. He played Joe Mangle from Neighbours.
Oh yeah, Mark Little. Yeah.
He did the Big Breakfast for a while.
Yeah. I like my stand up comedian as well. I saw him do a gig in London once, in front of about 10 people. He was quite good, but it was just one of those sort of random sort of Wednesday night comedy clubs that. I was thinking, Mark Little, you must be bigger than this. You were Joe Mangle. But Mark Little, he's a good guy.
John and Terry for me, 17, because Brian and Tony would be too expensive.
Yeah, I literally just thought you said John Terry there for a minute. He probably would turn out age 10, dressed in his sort of full kit.
And then I had PJ and Duncan, because, you know.
Back then, that's the sort of thing they would have done. They needed to stay famous, didn't they, at the time before they became what they are now, as in Ant and Dec, but yeah, that's the sort of thing they'd. Oh yeah, you'd have definitely had to have someone from like a biker grovey, and even like Grangeville sort of background. Yeah, EastEnders as well, maybe.
Sean McGuire would be in a given, surely.
Surely. I mean, you know, he's got to be done.
Barry Chuckle, I've got as well, or both.
Barry Chuckle, Jesus, you really have thought about this, haven't you?
Well, weren't they on the board at Rotherham at one point?
Yeah, I think they were. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're into their football, to me, to you, all that. Yeah. Anyway, right, we could go on for ages, so that's
in terms of... If there's anyone still listening,
if anyone's listening and wants to say Pat Sharp, then they're allowed to, okay.
Oh, without a doubt. You'd have to have the twins as cheerleaders.
Dorted.
That's the way to end the show.
That's the way to end the show. Tell us where they can find you on the Twitter feed. That's how we're end the show, Mr. Chambers.
At Tavern Football.
Oh, he got it right. Follow the show at Gay90s on Twitter and not on Instagram because it's blocked, so we won't tell that one. But you can follow myself at AshrayShootGay. Next show, I've planned it, so we're going to do it. We're going to keep along this theme and talk about the forgotten tournaments in terms of friendly tournaments. So Umbro Cup, US Cup, Le Tournoi will be discussed on our next show, so look out for that. But until next time, keep it 90s.